Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sports Tonight on BSL Radio. Join Rob Shields and Mike Weber as they talk about the Baltimore Orioles, Baltimore Ravens, University of Maryland Terrapins, and more. Be part of the show. Call us at 347-215-8391.
Welcome to Sports Tonight with Rob and Mike. Mike Weber here along with Rob Shields. Tonight we will get into the NFL playoffs. Obviously, very tough loss for the Ravens this past weekend against the Patriots. So that's going to be the main topic. But we'll also get into the rest of the playoffs. So, of course, Seattle beat the Panthers. Green Bay in a very exciting game and a controversial game as well. Beat the Cowboys 26-21. And the Colts with the upset in Denver 24-13 with Peyton Manning struggling immensely. So let's start with the Ravens here, Rob. Lost 35-31 in Foxborough. Very tough loss. They obviously could have won that game. They were up by 14 at two different points. Then they had the ball at the end of the game, and Flacco went deep for Torrey Smith, and it was picked off by the safety to basically just about end the game. New England with some weird clock management after that, just a kneel down, and they ended up having to punt back to the Ravens, and the Ravens had, you know, the punt return and the Hail Mary. So that's the type of move where, obviously, if the Patriots lost or if it's a head coach that people like to make fun of more than Bill Belichick, I think he would probably get hammered for that a lot more. But anyway, thoughts on the game, Rob?
Well, you know, it's interesting to me. I don't recall ever seeing New England have to do like trick type plays to win games. You know, the Edelman pass, the ineligible receiver thing. not that I think it was a bad play or anything. It's just I'm just surprised to see them do that. Obviously, it's likely something they saw on tape that they felt that they could take advantage of, or it's something that they just felt that since they never run it, people wouldn't believe that that's what was going to happen. So, I watched that game, and I don't come away thinking that New England is really any better. I think they are pretty close. I think the Ravens were the more talented team. I think they were obviously the bigger and more physical team. I think that, you know, the big thing and the big surprise, I guess, about the game was the poor red zone defense by the Ravens. You know, we kind of knew that New England would be able to move the ball inside the 20s, but, you know, the fact that the Ravens couldn't stop them, just say, twice from not scoring touchdowns, you know, and holding them to field goals there. I mean, look, New England held them to the one field goal, and that ended up being the difference in the game because Owen Daniels dropped that one touchdown pass. So, you know, we saw last night in the national championship game the value of holding the other team to a field goal instead of a touchdown, and what can come from that. So, you know, that was a big disappointment considering how good the Ravens have been this year. I mean, the Tom Brady scramble, the Ravens had it defended well. You know, that was kind of bad luck on their part. That's just how things ended up being. but, you know, you've got to make a stop. And the Ravens were really kind of unable to do that, especially in the red zone. So that surprised me some. But, you know, I mean, offensively, they played really well. The Flacco pass, the interception, I still can't believe he threw that ball. It wasn't necessary. It's not like there's anything wrong with going for a touchdown if you think it's there, but it's got to be no doubt about it in that situation, in my opinion. And, you know, we saw a camera view, a still shot from kind of behind Flacco, and, you know, I can see why he thought Torrey Smith was going to be open, but he didn't see that the safety was coming over. And there's just no need for that. You know, run the ball there on the first or second down, get your first downs. you know, keep going down the field. There was plenty of time on the clock. You still had a timeout, so time wasn't really a factor at that point. So I really believe that they would have scored a touchdown had Joe not made that decision. I New England just, they weren't stopping him. It was one of those situations where the Ravens were going to have to stop themselves, and maybe that would have happened. You know, you never know. You can have the Lee Evans play all over again. A pass is dropped in the end zone. You lose the game that way or something. But I think they would have gotten in position. I think there was a great chance that they were going to score, and Joe just got a little greedy, and there was no need for it. So it's kind of depressing because, I don't think New England's any better than us, and you know, I think you can make the argument the Ravens are the better team, or at the very least, they're a tough matchup for New England. Which doesn't always mean that you're the better team. It's just that you match up better. But, you know, I really felt, you know, watching that game, that the Ravens would have gone to the Super Bowl had they won, just as I feel that New England's going to go. And, you know, it's a little upsetting as a fan, you know, to have that happen. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, this young team got to play two games. You get a lot of these guys who hadn't had any playoff experience before. So hopefully that'll do wonders for them for next year.
Certainly a great experience, and I'm not a Ravens fan, but I could totally understand that it would be very frustrating knowing that, you know, this extremely close game is probably what kept you guys from making the Super Bowl, because like you said, Patriots, pretty strong favorite in the AFC Championship game against the Colts. Ravens, you know, it would have been closer in terms of the spread. I don't know what the spread would have been, but they would have had a good shot in that game. I don't know if I would have, you know, that's a tough call, actually, because it would have been in Indianapolis, and, you know, the Colts do have a very good passing attack led by Andrew Luck, so I wouldn't be super confident in that game, but they would have had a good shot, obviously, the Ravens. But anyway, yeah, I guess, I mean, the Flacco interception is ultimately the deciding play there at the end, but just like in any game, you have tons of moments and plays before that bring you to that situation. So you mentioned the Owen Daniels drop. I mean, it wasn't an easy catch by any means, but, you know, could have caught it, and that would have been big. You know, just overall, a game that obviously could have went either way. Flacco, you know, played a good game for the most part, especially early on. But, you know, the other interception was really bad, too. It's just that interception turned out not to matter that much because New England got it and did nothing with it. And, you know, so it ended up not being a big deal. But that was a pretty bad pass. And, you know, Brady had that terrible interception at the end of the first half. And that was a I would say, the moment. If the Ravens won the game, that would have been the moment to point to for, like, Patriots fans is why they lost, because that was an awful interception. New England was going to probably get a field goal, maybe a touchdown, but probably at least a field goal if Brady does not throw that interception, and then the Ravens don't get the ball to be able to score a touchdown there at the end of the half. So instead of Baltimore 21, New England 14 is, 17-14 New England, maybe 21-14 New England. So that was huge, but ultimately, you know, New England pulls it out, so that's not a moment people are going to harp on like people are going to harp on the Joe Flacco interception. So it just, you know, in all these situations, regardless of which game we're talking about, the winning quarterback and the winning team, you can kind of sweep under the rug mistakes that are made, and then the losing quarterback and team, those mistakes get magnified. So, yeah, that decision was definitely poor by Flacco. And, you know, it's just, I guess, the big narrative of him being great in the playoffs, and he has been great in the playoffs, I guess, is not going to be quite as strong of a narrative going forward until at least they get back to the playoffs, and let's see what he does then. But that's definitely a hit to that huge resume for him, especially recently, where obviously 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl, he was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, he still had a big game. I mean, he had just under 300 yards passing. He threw four touchdowns. He had a QBR of 85.7, which was actually higher than Brady's. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that they had talked about with Joe, he hadn't thrown a pick. He had, up until the first pick, he had thrown 17 touchdowns. His last, you know, since the Super Bowl run, he had 17 touchdowns and no picks. So, you know, look, it's kind of like how we talked about, like, Dallas, that we didn't think their defense was going to be as bad as last year because their defense was historically bad last year. You don't expect a guy to continue at a historic level for multiple postseasons in a row. Some stuff is going to come to an end, and he's going to throw a pick. I mean, look, he threw the ball 45 times. You're bound to throw an interception or two, you know, in that amount of throws. It's just bound to happen. So, so I don't know. I hope people don't, like, I haven't heard any of the talk about people saying, oh, okay, well, now we're back to regular Joe Flacco. I mean, because that really wouldn't be fair. That was an awful decision. It's something he should not have done. But, you know, overall, he played a really good game. I actually did think that Brady interception was going to be the turning point in the game. And not only that, you go into the half, but then you get an early touchdown in the third quarter. you're up 28-14. You had to be feeling pretty good. But the problem is the way they wanted to play defense the other day and give those 5-10-yard chunks, it's fine to do that up to a point, but at some point you got to do something different and make them adjust and see what happens. And they didn't do that, and they were allowing New England to just march down the field. Now, the other side to that is the Ravens have played defense like that for a lot of the year because they've had so many injuries in the secondary. And what's happened is you've moved the ball, and then you get to the red zone, and they've stopped you. And they didn't stop the other day. So that was really – I'm sure Dean Tease was going to say they are going to move it from the 20 to 20 all game long on us, but then we're going to stop them from getting a couple of touchdowns. And it would have been totally fair for him to think that, judging by how good they were in the regular season at doing just that. So, you know, they didn't have to worry about the run. You know, that was nothing. They didn't even run the ball in the second half at all. So, at least a handoff. So, you know, I would have liked to have seen at least a little bit of an adjustment by the team. You know, they didn't. They just continued to let him go down the field. But, you know, again, you do expect your defense to step up when they needed to. And then, of course, the pass rush was only so much of an issue for New England because Brady was getting the ball, getting it out immediately. It's not possible for the pass rush to get to him. The only time the pass rush was able to get to him is if the receivers were covered or they jammed them or whatever was going on that we couldn't see on camera that made Brady hold the ball that extra second longer. Then the pass rush would get to him because that offensive line really isn't that good. But, you know, when the receivers were wide open, it was Brady was just able to play pitch and catch. And, you know, I don't think Brady, you know, Brady has really good numbers in that game, but I mean, he didn't do anything I don't think that really wowed you. You know, one of the posters on Baltimore Sports and Life was saying that, you know, there's not another quarterback in the league that would have done that day. And I mean, I totally disagree with that. I mean, when you're going to give guys those big chunks of yardage all day long, I mean, the Ravens had stuff like that happen to them all year long. Guys, I mean, Andy Dalton and Brian Hoyer did that to them when they played them. The difference is the Ravens kind of tightened up a little bit in the red zone, and it allowed them to beat Cleveland, and it allowed them to have a chance against Cincinnati in both games. They just weren't able to come through. But, you know, I'm really surprised at the poor red zone defense. And, you know, and ultimately, if you're going to point to one thing that the reason that they lost, that would be the one. It's not fair to point to one thing, but that would be the one thing I think that you would point to.
Sure, that was definitely a huge disappointment for the Ravens, something that they have done well at this season. In terms of Brady, I mean, well, he was hit a good amount in that game. He got hit 9 times, got sacked a couple times as well. So, you know, he did take a pretty good beating, but I generally would agree that it's not like his game was off the charts amazing. We already talked about the horrible interception towards the end of the first half when he was throwing to Gronkowski. Otherwise, in the first half especially, he had some bad throws. There were, underthrown balls or kind of just weak throws or completely off target. So, yeah, he ended up with very good stats. He did have some nice plays. The throw to LaFell was quite good. And you can say, and that was when the Ravens were in press coverage, and you can say, well, Melvin could just turn around. But that's the problem when you put a guy like Melvin in press coverage. He's unlikely to turn around. He's not good. So, there's that. And that happens with a lot of cornerbacks, by the way, not just him. Well, that's a pretty standard play in the NFL. It's cornerbacks not turning around and either getting a pass interference or letting the guy catch the ball. So, that was a nice throw. And he executed very well in the red zone. Got to give him credit for that. And he did. You have to give him a lot of credit, though, as well for, he was pretty much the offense along with the Edelman play. The running game was non-existent. He had the run for a touchdown. The running backs had 7 carries for 14 yards. So, there was no commitment to the run there and no real effectiveness when they did run. So you got to give him some credit for overcoming that, as well as just the whole offense besides the running game, credit for overcoming that. And, that's pretty pedestrian, to say the least. So on the other hand, the Ravens did have a very good running game, forced that 24 carries for 129 yards. And then back to Flacco for a second. I think, and this isn't about Flacco so much as it's just about analysis of NFL play, I think there was a little bit too much made of the lack of interception thing because, you're judging the results, which is fine, but there were a lot of plays during that stretch, a lot of throws that could have been picked off. The last week against the Steelers, there was a dropped interception. So if that guy caught it, no one would be talking about it this week against the Patriots. But he had a few passes before his first interception that were potential interception-type throws, a drop by Jamie Collins on the deep throw to the tight end. And there was a weird decision by him to throw a soft, floating ball to the sideline at one point that, was a potential interception ball. So, that's just the nature of the NFL. There's a lot of times there's going to be pick-worthy throws that aren't picked. But that should kind of be judged in the analysis of the quarterback. If a defensive back drops an easy interception, that doesn't mean the guy had a better game. So, I thought it was a little extreme with that, even though, obviously, again, Joe had played tremendously well during that stretch. And then as far as, I think this game, I think he played well, but I don't think he played quite as well as some people are saying. Because, obviously, you have those two interceptions in the second half, plus, the Jamie Collins drop interception, some other questionable throws. And, he averaged 6.5 yards per throw, which is, that's okay. It's nothing special at all. I think the big reason why, it's considered a big game is because of he threw 4 touchdowns. But, if one of those touchdowns was a throw you or I could have made to Justin Forsett on the just a little swing pass. But if one of those touchdown passes ends up being a touchdown run, then it's 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, and then it's not a big deal. So I think it's ultimately more about how many points you lead your team to and factoring in how good your running game is and all that than just factoring in or just focusing on the amount of touchdown throws. Because there's a lot of times where, a touchdown could go easily to the quarterback or the running back based on what the play call is. So it's a little exaggerated. And that's just not just for Flacco, but for quarterbacks in general, running backs. I would always say, running back touchdown totals were generally overrated because, if the quarterback decided or the play caller decided to go 3rd and 1 and throw it to the tight end, then there goes the running back touchdown. It's not a big deal. Anyway, I'm kind of rambling here, so go ahead, Rob. Say whatever you want.
Well, one of the things that was a little surprising in the game, I didn't actually even realize it until after the game looking at the stats, the Ravens were only 1 for 9 on 3rd down. They went 3 for 3 on 4th down, but 1 for 9 on 3rd down, that's pretty awful. And I don't I don't recall as was into the game, you know, thinking, God, why didn't you do this on the third? There were two calls that I felt were really poor. And, you know, I don't know what would have changed. I mean, I have no idea on the third and one why they ran the reverse to Campanero. That made no sense to me. You were pounding the ball. You were moving the ball with ease. You know, who knows what happens if you get that first down, because that was around midfield or so. So you get that first down, you know, maybe you're driving again to get another score. And, you know, so I think that was a huge play. And then I don't know why Dean Pease on the third down on the 5-yard line with the Gronk touchdown. Not only, I don't understand why he wanted to call the blitz there, because you knew if you called the blitz that Brady was going to get the ball out immediately. And by doing that, you were leaving Gronkowski with single coverage against Melvin. Now, I don't care who's single covering Gronkowski right there. They're at a disadvantage, but especially a guy who you picked off of some team's practice squad, even though Melvin did play reasonably well, you know, in the last few weeks of the season. But still, that was a poor decision. And then the Ravens players for showing the blitz so early, that was terrible on their part. So the execution was terrible. The play calling was terrible. So I didn't get either of those two calls from the coaching point of view. It was just one of those things where there was just no reason to make those plays, to run those plays. You know, just play your base defense, do what you're needing to do, crowd it up, force them into a field goal, and get off the field. You know, run the ball up the middle, take your first down, and keep going. Why do you have to run a trick play there? I have no idea. So those two calls stood out to me in that game as just real questionable. And, yes, the players didn't execute it, and you know, that's the other problem. But I didn't understand why you even put the players in the position to where they have to execute those things when, you know, they're just not plays that are – they're not high-percentage plays. And so I didn't get that at all. I think the coaching was reasonably well for was pretty good for most of the game. You know, Harbaugh won a challenge, which like never happens. You know, they did kind of waste a couple of timeouts, but you know, overall, I don't think that there was really anything to really be upset with coaching wise, except for those two calls. And those two calls were pretty big. It may not have ended up mattering. Maybe they're in their regular defense and the other team scores, or they decide to run it normally on third and one and they don't get the first down. I mean, you know, both of those are obviously extremely possible, but you know, I just don't, you know, I if you're going to do it, I'd rather them lose. You know, if you're not going to make it, I'd rather it be because you're doing it in the way that you always do it successfully, as opposed to trying something different that's not as likely to work. So those two things stood out to me as something that bothered me. But you know, I would imagine that there are things like that'll happen throughout every game, you know, for both sides. So you know, that is what it is. But you know, if you don't do those things, maybe they win this game. And you know, that's another thing. It's just a little disheartening when you look at, you know, little things here and there. And both sides could do that. But, you know, looking at it from the Ravens' point of view, since they lost, you know, Flacco doesn't throw that ball if those calls aren't made. And the coaches just – if those guys just do what they would normally do in a situation and just not make the poor decision, then, you know, maybe you win this game. So it kind of sucks because, like I said, I just don't think New England's a better team. It just so happens that they made fewer dumb mistakes than the Ravens did in that game. And unfortunately for the Ravens, mistakes here and there are really costing this year, because they could have had a better season than they did for sure.
Yeah, as far as the red zone defense, I mean, as we've talked about, I mean, they've tried multiple things and none of them happened to work out. So, you know, who knows as far as that's concerned. But, yeah, very disappointing end to the year. But ultimately, when we were talking before the season started, not just here on the show, but, you know, people on BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com, I think this season went as well or better than most people would have expected. So, you know, a pretty successful season, given the expectations. But, you know, of course, it's hard not to be disappointed, a little bitter, and so forth, due to the close loss and being that close to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, when this season started, the goal was, okay, or the thought was 10 wins would win the division. So that didn't end up being the case, but that's what people thought. that, you know, you get back into the playoffs, you know, you know, and then see what happens. So they got 10 wins, but obviously that wasn't enough to win the division, but they were able to go and beat the division winner, Pittsburgh, you know, in the playoffs on the road. And then you were right there with New England, who might win the Super Bowl. I think right now, I guess it would depend on the health of Rodgers' cast, but right now I would personally put New England third in terms of how I would rank who's the most likely Super Bowl winner. That being said, I think New England has the best chance to get to the Super Bowl. The NFC game I think is going to be better than the AFC game, but yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. I think that anytime you get double digit wins, you get in the playoffs, especially if you win a game and you're giving yourself a chance to advance. That's got to be considered a successful season. I mean, this is not an easy sport to just say, well, we're going to make the playoffs, and if you don't get to the AFC champ. I mean, Denver is probably the only team in the league, and I guess maybe you could have said New England too because they're a little older in spots, but that's about it. Those are the only teams that I think going into this year you would have said, if you do not make at least the conference title game, at a minimum, it's a disappointing season for you. I mean, Denver went all out to try to get there this year, as they should have, and they didn't make it. Their fans, I don't think I look at this season, if I'm a Broncos fan, as a success, which is saying a lot because they did win 12 games. They were the 2 seed. They did win their division. But I don't think you can look at that as a success. I really don't, because, you know, your goal is only one thing, and you couldn't even win one playoff game, much less win two and get to the Super Bowl. So, but yeah, for the most part, I think any Ravens fan who says that this season was a disappointment is lying. I think it's a disappointing ending, especially considering that you really could have won this game. But, you know, that's the way it goes. And, you know, the last time that they lost a heartbreaking game in New England, they bounced back the next year and won the Super Bowl. Not saying that they'll do that next year, but they will have the talent on the field to where they could make a real run in the playoffs next year, especially depending on what they do offensively.
So let's get into the future of the Ravens here before we talk about the rest of the playoffs. All right, so a few issues here. First off, Gary Kubiak has said that he will return to the Ravens. Now, however, with John Fox being fired in Denver, Denver has asked for permission to interview him. I'm not aware of any answer on that as far as if that's going to happen or not. So we'll see about that. That's obviously a big issue since he did such a good job with the Ravens offense this year. Otherwise, on offense, Torrey Smith is a free agent. And then on defense, you know, you have Pernell McPhee as the main guy that could be lost. So, you know, what are your thoughts here? I think you're right that this team has the talent going forward to be a contender. And, you know, Denver could be diminished. And, you know, New England might fall back a little bit as well. So the Ravens could be one of the very best teams in the AFC, if not the best next year, possibly, depending on what they do in this offseason. And then, of course, you know, how things break next year, because NFL is out of luck in terms of injuries and so forth. But what are your thoughts about this offseason?
Well, you know, as you said, they don't have a lot of key guys that are free agents. They have some, but they don't have a lot of guys that are like, oh my God, we're going to lose this guy, we're going to lose that guy. Mike Randall, who is one of the Baltimore Sports and Life contributors for the Ravens, you know, he just put out a second article about their off season. It looks like the article is talking about extension candidates, but you know, his first article was kind of looking at where the cap is. You know, first of all, that's going to be the big question: is what is the cap going to go up to? Is it going to be the same percentage that it was last year? Are they not going to go up, or is it going to go even higher? The speculation has been that it's going to be a little bit higher increase percentage wise than it was last season, but nobody really knows. So, you know, we've got to see that. I think there's a good chance that McPhee is gone. You know, he's just that latest Ravens defender that just has a big year in his contract year, and, you know, he's ready to go. Now, the one thing that could hold him back a little bit, which might make the Ravens a little bit more likely to keep him, well, there's two things. Number one, there are a lot of good pass rushers on the market this year. I recently posted on Baltimore Sports and Life, Roto World Silva put out an article about the best free agents, and he was ranking them, Evan Silva. And he was ranking him. And for edge rushers, he has Pernell McPhee sixth. And ahead of him are Justin Houston, Jerry Hughes, Jason Pierre-Paul, Greg Hardy, and Brian Arakpo. So, and there's other guys in the top 10, Jason Worlds, Brandon Graham, Derek Morgan. I mean, there's Akeem Ayers. I mean, there's a lot of good guys that can get after the quarterback in the draft, I mean, available free agency. So, number one, how much will those guys hurt him? Now, McPhee, at least at one point late in the season, I don't know if he ended up, was Pro Football Focus's number one rated pass rusher. So depending on how many teams look at those numbers and really evaluate those numbers, we'll see what kind of contract he gets based off of something like that if teams are looking at that. The second thing that could hold McPhee back is that he was only a part-time player. His stats don't explode off the page. He didn't have a ton of tackles. He only had like 6 or 7 sacks. Things like that. Now, you can sit there and say, well, you know, he had those sacks in a part-time role. Can you imagine if he was a full-time player? Or you can sit there and wonder, is he really a guy capable of being a full-time player and somebody that we give $15 or $20 million guaranteed money to? I don't know. I would suspect that somebody's going to give him enough money to where the Ravens can't match it. That's my guess. Torrey Smith is a real interesting one. You know, he brings a lot of value to this offense. Flacco likes to throw it deep. Torrey Smith has proven himself to be a very good deep threat. He draws the pass interferences. You know, he has a big yards per catch average, which you know, we're seeing more and more of that in this game. I mean, I think there were somewhere between 5 and 10 of the rookie receivers this year that averaged around 15 yards a catch, give or take. So we're seeing more and more of that. So Torrey Smith has got value. But how much are you willing to pay a guy that is a questionable route runner and has questionable hands? I mean, that's the question. Now, he's still young, and, you know, he's not one of these receivers that gets a 5- and 6-year deal out of college because he wasn't a first-round pick. So he's still only, like, 25 years old. You know, you would expect the speed to still be there for another 3 or 4 years, so you wouldn't, you know, unless he starts getting leg injuries and things like that, but that could happen to anybody, so you can't really, you know, assume that or anything. So, you know, he's got value. There's no question about it. And he has a skill level and a talent that suits Joe Flacco and this offense. The question is, though, how much do you want to pay for that when, you know, we're starting to see more college guys being successful, when we see other top wide receivers that are available in free agency? You know, we'll see if Dez Bryant, who maybe the Ravens can't afford, maybe they can, maybe they can't. I guess that'll depend on the cap. But even if they can't, you see a guy like a Randall Cobb, you see a Demaryius Thomas, who maybe has the same issue with Dez Bryant. there are some quality receivers, and this is also supposed to be another good receiver draft. Not that you can't, you know, have Torrey Smith and one of the rookie receivers. So that's going to be the real interesting one to me, is how much do the Ravens value him? Do they value him at Eric Decker and Golden Tate money? Which I would say, judging by the market, he absolutely deserves it, because he's been every bit as productive and probably more so than those guys. So he certainly deserves the money that they got. But, you know, if you're the Ravens, do you want to pay him that money? Because all those guys that have gotten all those similar type contracts, Golden Tate's worked out so far, but the other guys, not so much. You know, Mike Wallace was a guy that we all thought that maybe he would look at a Mike Wallace contract with a similar skill set, and Mike Wallace's contract certainly hasn't worked out. So I don't really know. It's going to be interesting to me what his market is. I have to think that there'll be a minimum of one team out there that is willing to give him the same contract that Eric Decker or Golden Tate got right in that area. I'll be surprised if there's not a team that is willing to do that. Whether that's going to be the Ravens or not, that's what I'm not sure about. And whether, even if, let's just say, the Raiders were willing to give him that contract, does Torrey Smith say, I'd rather stay in Baltimore for less money? Maybe he will. So that's, to me, that is the interesting situation to watch. what they're going to do with him. And, you know, they're restricted free agents led by Tucker and Will Hill. I expect all those guys to get, you know, especially the better guys like those two, I expect them to get high tenders. So I don't think those guys are going to be going anywhere. You know, and there are going to be some cuts. I think they're going to end up cutting Nada. There's $8.5 million in savings, so I don't think you cannot cut him, or at least you have to restructure him, and he's going to have to take a much lesser salary. It's one of those two things is unquestionably going to happen. You know, Canty's likely gone. You know, Sam Cook might be gone. You don't really save anything by cutting Jacoby, so they probably bring him back, unfortunately. So they probably can clear up another, I don't know, $7 to $15 million off of their cap or so, depending on how they do things. And they get to carry just over $5 million over from this year's cap. So my guess is, you know, they'll be pushing 20-ish million, you know, low teens to $20 million under the cap, and you've got to keep your restricted free agents and your rookies and stuff like that. So they're not going to have a ton of money to spend in all likelihood in free agency. So in all likelihood, you're looking for more of the lower level guys, but you know, who knows, maybe the Ravens have something up their sleeve, because the one thing I have to think is that they look at their team and see that offensively, while they were good this year, they still lack a couple of really good playmakers. Now they may be able to get that in the draft this year, but you know, you would like to have at least one guy, whether you think it's Torrey Smith or Randall Cobb or whatever, but you would like to have at least one guy where you feel really good about joining the rest of what is going to be there. And then, you know, then you can attack in the draft. You know, you can decide if you're going to give Forsett a contract, which I'm a little iffy about. So they've got some decisions, but the good news is for them, they have a whole lot of positions that they don't have to touch. So, you know, they can stand to add a little bit in the secondary, and they can add some skill position talent. But other than that, there's not a whole lot that they're going to really have to go in the offseason saying, we must add to this unit.
Yeah, the Ravens are definitely in good shape for next year. We've disagreed some on Torrey Smith on Baltimore Sports and Life. I mean, there's a huge conversation for those interested about, mostly about Torrey Smith, in, you know, the aforementioned Mike Randall's thread. Well, this is a different thread. This is part one, the salary cap thread. It's kind of turned into mostly Torrey Smith discussion. So, you know, if you can get, you know, Dez Bryant or Demaryius Thomas for a contract that makes sense, yeah, sure, that would be great. You mentioned, though, that Ravens have some cap issues, and that's probably unlikely. We'll see if they're even interested in that, for one, and if they can manage it. But if they can manage it, it's going to come at the expense of, you know, other positions. So, you know, if we're talking about, you know, a lesser price range, I think Torrey Smith makes a lot of sense, because I think Torrey Smith fits very well with Joe Flacco, because of Flacco being a very good deep ball thrower. Torrey Smith is, you know, one of the better deep ball or deep threats in the league. And, you know, his numbers were not very good this year overall. He played better late in the year. And he also had, like, two games where he was hampered with injury and basically didn't do anything. But early in the year was almost a zero for a while there. Part of that was, I guess, he had some issues going on. And then the other part was transitioning into Kubiak's offense. And, you know, I think even late in the year, I'm not convinced that Torrey Smith was utilized totally properly. But, you know, I think, and this isn't really a Kubiak thing as it is like a most NFL coaches, it's like, all right, I'm going to use my system and you know, somewhat adapt it to the players, but not necessarily adapt it as much as we should. But, you know, I could be wrong. I'm obviously not an offensive coordinator or anywhere near qualified to be one. So, Torrey, if Gary Kubiak, depending on what Gary Kubiak thinks, assuming he comes back, if he's a fan of Torrey and is willing to utilize him a little bit more in the offense, I think he makes a lot of sense. He makes the defense play the Ravens differently than they would if there's no Torrey Smith. Or if you get in like another more possession type of receiver in his place. So he takes the top off the defense, which is very valuable. So even when he's not actually having big plays himself, he helps others have big plays, or at least, you know, help the offense move. And, you know, as far as of drafting someone, you can do that. But as you said, you could draft someone and keep Torrey Smith. So I don't think it's an excellent plan when we're talking about the Ravens being a Super Bowl contender in all likelihood next year to, you know, rely on a rookie to replace Torrey Smith. That rookie could become very good. Maybe he'll be good next year. It's more of a question mark. So I would personally, I mean, of course, it depends on the contract, but I would be willing to go at least close to that Decker Tate level, if not up to that level. And by the way, Decker, I think, had pretty good production considering the Jets situation this year. So I don't know if that can be labeled as a bad contract at this point. I would be willing to do that because I think he is a difference maker. Of course, he's not elite by any means. And you can look at Randall Cobb, and Cobb will probably fall in between Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and then the lower level with Torrey Smith. Now, Cobb is a young receiver, and he's talented, no doubt. But in judging receivers, their situation obviously matters in terms of their production. Yeah, Randall Cobb this year had almost 1,300 yards. Okay, but he plays in a prolific offense led by Aaron Rodgers. So, you know, if he goes to a less prolific offense, less prolific of passing attack, which the Ravens have, is he going to put up the same numbers? Probably not. Now, maybe he's featured more in this offense than the Patriots offense where there's, you know, Jordy Nelson, etc. But I think we've seen multiple receivers come from the Packers putting up big numbers, even going back to when Brett Favre was there. And then they go to a new team, and suddenly they're not nearly as productive. So I think you have to be wary of any receiver, pretty much, unless it's like a clear, like, Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant type, where they're, like, incredibly physically gifted. You have to be wary of any receiver that comes from, like, an amazing, like, Packers or Broncos recently type offense, because their production is going to drop when they come to a team that is more, you know, roughly middle of the pack in terms of a passing offense.
Yeah, I mean, I have a few thoughts on what you said. First of all, one of the other issues with signing, like, let's say, a Dez Bryant or somebody like that is that the Ravens have a lot of guys coming up soon that are going to be extension candidates. A guy like Kelechi Assembly, maybe Ricky Wagner, Jimmy Smith. You know, maybe Will Hill after next year. I mean, there are going to be several young players that you're going to have to start paying sometime soon. Or they're going to walk. Now, you're going to let some of them walk, obviously, as they always do. But, you know, they're going to be important guys. And if you give $30 million, $40 million guaranteed or whatever the number is to a wide receiver, you're obviously hurting your chances of keeping some of those guys long term. So that's one issue there with that. talking about Randall Cobb, I really like Randall Cobb. I think he's got really good hands. He runs good routes. He's only 24. He doesn't turn 25 until August. So, you know, he's going to be playing, you know, next year, you know, at his age 25 season, which is a really nice year to be getting a free agent, a wide receiver at that age. Torrey Smith is similar. The one thing I would say about Randall Cobb, he's only 5'10". And, you know, your two big-time receivers are going to be guys that are, quite frankly, on the shorter side for an NFL receiver if you were to sign him. So that doesn't, it doesn't make me overly excited to pay big money for him. I tend to agree with you about, you know, being in an offense. First of all, he's playing with the best quarterback in the league, and a guy with pinpoint accuracy and things like that. That's going to make anybody better. So I don't necessarily think Randall Cobb's going to go somewhere and not be as good. I just personally think, like, if we didn't have Steve Smith and we had a bigger target, you know, and Randall Cobb was coming in for a role, that might be one thing. But if I'm the Ravens, I want to target a bigger guy. You know, you know, Dez Bryant is a guy who, I don't care what offense he's in, he should have a big year. And you know, you alluded to that basically when you mentioned him and Calvin Johnson. They're going to be able to do anything in an offense, and they're going to be productive. The question is can the Ravens find that guy in the draft? You know, there's a guy, Doriel Beckham Green, or Green Beckham, whichever it is. He is he's a beast. He had a lot of problems at Missouri. He got kicked off the team. He transferred to Oklahoma, but he can actually declare for the NFL draft this year, and he still hasn't even played a snap in Oklahoma yet. Kid is super talented, all the upside in the world, but he's had his problems. So, you know, you got to do your due diligence and stuff like that. And there are other good receivers. Another guy that, you know, I wonder if the Ravens would consider, and we'll see if he gets back into football, is Justin Blackmon. I think he's probably done in Jacksonville. So he's a guy that was starting to show, you know, that upper echelon ability. And, you know, if you feel that he still has that in him, you know, he's still very young. So if you feel that he's still, that might be a chance for you to get a number one receiver or at least a potential number one receiver at a really cheap price. So I think, look, ideally, Torrey Smith can be had for, ideally you can get Torrey Smith back for less than those guys got. Whether that's likely or not, who knows. Those guys maybe were coming off of better years than Torrey Smith was this year. Torrey Smith did have 11 touchdowns. But ideally you can get Torrey Smith for less money, and you're able to draft one of the stud receivers in the draft. So you can go in the next year with that receiver, with Torrey Smith, with Steve Smith, with Campanaro and Marlon Brown. You know, and that's a pretty solid core. So, you know, we'll see what they do there. You know, when we're talking about on Baltimore Sports and Life, we're talking about the running game. Nobody's really bringing up re-signing Forsett. I really don't see how you can, unless he's going to sign for very little. You know, there's still a durability issue with him, and there's a, well, you were really good this year. Are you going to continue to be really good, and how much do we want to pay for that issue? So, you know, that's there. And then, you know, the Ravens just, in general, you know, we talk about the salary cap every year. Salary cap is a problem every year. And a big reason for that is because the Ravens, they either have guys making a lot of money or they have guys making nothing. You know, it's similar to a Stars and Scrubs thing in terms of how you could look at a payroll in baseball. Now, the difference is in football, it's not necessarily that these guys are scrubs. It's just they're not making anything. Part of the problem with that, though, is the Ravens, they don't take a guy like Kelechi Osemele, for example. You know, you sign him now, if the player wants to, of course, but you sign him a year or two before they hit free agency and try to keep their contract in that middle ground. And the Ravens don't have any of those. You know, they've got Ladarius Webb and Flacco and Nada and Suggs and these guys taking up, you know, $10 million in cap space apiece or more. And then you get a guy, you know, like Timmy Jernigan, who's a beast, who's making, you know, $400,000 or whatever it is. So, you know, that's where the Ravens, you know, that's where they kind of get hit a little bit by the salary cap, because they do a good job of keeping their guys, the guys that they want to keep, but they don't get them signed early enough to where they end up getting them to the point where it's free agency and you're paying all the money for them. So, you know, that's going to be something that, you know, I would like to see changed over the court, or, you know, over the next few years. But Ozzie Newsome obviously has his philosophy about that. He's not willing to do it, so I don't think he's going to change, although I do think it would help the cap in future years.
Yeah, regarding Forsett, next year is his age 30 year. He's, you know, basically done very little in the NFL until this season. Obviously, he's ideal for, you know, a Gary Kubiak offense. So I don't know that there's going to be that much of a market, along with the fact that running backs have been de-emphasized in terms of how many resources teams are willing to put into them in terms of both free agency and in the draft. So the Ravens might be able to keep him for, you know, not that big of a commitment due to the age and those other reasons. Anyway, let's you know, finish up here, Rob, with going back to the NFL playoffs. So we have, you know, in the NFC, Seattle hosting Green Bay. You mentioned the calf situation with Rodgers. Before we get into that game, though, you know, the Packer-Cowboy game, was an excellent game. 26-21, Green Bay won. And, you know, I think both quarterbacks played very well. Rodgers overcame the calf issue, which, for the most part, I mean, obviously, it held him back. And then Romo has been dealing with severe injuries as well, and he was getting hammered quite a bit in that game. So, I mean, he got hit 8 times and sacked 4 times. So, you know, very strong effort from him. He went 15 for 19, 191 yards, 2 TDs, no picks. Now, he did fumble twice, and luckily neither of those were lost. And Rodgers did lose a fumble as well. So, you know, that game came down to the end, just like the Raven-Patriot game. And, of course, there was the controversial Dez Bryant play, which happened on a 4th and short. Romo decided to go deep to Dez Bryant. One-on-one coverage, basically a 50-50 ball. But when it's Dez Bryant, it's, you know, 50-50 ball is probably like a 70-30 ball or whatever. So Bryant makes the remarkable catch, at least it seems. Then as he's coming down, in my view, he was, you know, it was a football move in my view, because he took some steps and lunged towards the end zone to try to get the touchdown. And when he came down, the ball popped up. So it was ruled not a catch due to the Calvin Johnson rule. You have to complete the process of a catch thing. So I know we both think that rule is ridiculous, but I guess it's the right call. I'm still a little iffy on that because, again, I think it was, you know, a football move. But anyway, any thoughts on that play or just that game in general? Because, again, both quarterbacks played very well, and I think this is a game where even though the Cowboys lost, it's very hard to keep up with the narrative of Romo is a choker, that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Cowboys played well. I was surprised that Green Bay held them to the amount of points they did. You know, I know Dallas did some things to shoot themselves in the foot, but still, I'm still surprised Green Bay's defense was able to do that, especially early on. I didn't think that Green Bay would be able to win that game early on watching Rodgers because he was a statue, and he just could not move back there. I think that either he got a shot or the shot started taking effect or it just loosened up a little bit because he certainly was able to move a little bit better as the game went on, although he said he probably hurt the calf a little bit more. You know, it was probably a little bit worse after the game than it was, you know, leading up to the game. But, you know, the Dez Bryant play, that's a catch. Now, Chris Carter says it's not a catch. Which I was surprised to hear. He said, look, the way the rule is, you control the ball the entire time, that it's not a catch. And people are saying, do you change that rule? The problem is if you change it, you know, they were, you know, I heard Ryan Clark talking this morning on Mike and Mike, and he was like, you know, well, what do you change it to? And, you know, now it becomes a little bit more subjective and all that kind of stuff. You know, the way it is right now, you have to do everything perfectly for it to be a catch, and if you don't, then it's not a catch. Now, part of me says, you know what? Screw these receivers. They get every advantage for everything, so if this is the only disadvantage they have, tough. You know, deal with it. But the other side to that is he jumped up. He made a great catch. He caught the ball. He went down to the ground. He extended the ball. You know, they're saying that him falling down or taking steps while he's falling because it wasn't a controlled fall is not a football move. I don't know. He jumped up, he caught the ball. So to me, it's a catch. I think it's a ridiculous rule. It's poorly worded and everything else. But by the letter of the law and the way the rule states, it wasn't a catch. So that's just really, really bad luck for Bryant and the Cowboys because, you know, I don't know that they would have still won the game, but I think, you know, I think it'd be pretty shocking if they had not gotten a touchdown there. I mean, they would have had to get some penalties or fumble it or something, which DeMarco Murray certainly can do. But I think that they take the lead there, and then it's just, you know, can they stop Rodgers and the Packers from getting a field goal to win the game?
Yeah, ridiculous rule. I would change the rule. But anyway, and DeMarco Murray did fumble, and that was one of the crucial plays of the game, along with this Dez Bryant play, because DeMarco Murray was going to waltz into the end zone on a long touchdown run, but instead he fumbled, and, you know, that was a big turning point. I mean, Dallas's offense was able to do pretty much what it wanted for the most part, except for when Romo was sacked. Otherwise, you know, they averaged 6.2 yards per play, and, you know, if the Dez Bryant play holds up, And then that obviously goes up, and they score probably 28 points. And if DeMarco Murray doesn't fumble, then they score 35 points. So, you know, their offense was able to get things done for the most part. But credit to Green Bay for pulling it out, and I think, you know, Green Bay probably goes down and still wins the game anyway if the Dez Bryant play holds up. So we now have Seattle hosting Green Bay, rematch of the first game of the year between those two. Seattle won convincingly. We have the Rodgers injury issue. So I'm going to have to favor Seattle, the team that, you know, I went with preseason. You went with the Green Bay Packers preseason. So this is a matter of seeing which of us gets the NFC representative right. But I think considering, you know, the injury, considering where the game's at, I think Seattle is rightfully favored.
Yeah, I have a hard time taking the Packers in this one because of the injury. I probably would pick the Packers to win this game if Rodgers was totally healthy, but he's not, and that is the wrong team to have an injury that causes you to not be able to move around that well. So I don't know, you know, hopefully Rodgers isn't dumb, or not necessarily Rodgers, but the game plan that they actually throw to the right side of the field, because if you recall, they didn't even throw it to the right side of the field against Sherman in the first game of the year. So, you know, use the whole field. We'll see. I mean, the best thing that can happen with the Packers is that they're able to run the ball really well. And there have been some teams that have been able to run it on Seattle this year. So if Green Bay is able to run it and they're able to get the ball out and Rodgers doesn't have to sit there and take as many hits and they're able to control the clock and things like that, Seattle doesn't have a prolific offense by any stretch. So, you know, they certainly can they can certainly do some things, Green Bay can, defensively, to where they can limit them from getting touchdowns and things like that. It's just, will Rodgers have enough time and be able to move around enough to where they can make plays in the passing game? That's going to be the tough thing, and I think because of that injury, it's just really tough to pick against Seattle, who's playing excellent football right now, especially defensively.
Well, and while Seattle may not have a prolific offense, they are rated the fourth best offense by Football Outsiders, so it is a very good offense. And you mentioned that some teams have been able to run on them. Well, that's true. They have the second best run defense in the league, according to Football Outsiders. So overall, I think Seattle should be favored here, and I'm obviously picking them. To the AFC, Patriots, Colts, you know, these teams have played a few times since Andrew Luck has become the quarterback for the Indianapolis Colts, and it has not gone too well for young Andrew. So, you know, New England this year, let's see, let me find it real quick. New England won 42-20 in Indianapolis this year, and they won convincingly the other, I think it's two times that they've played since Andrew Luck has become the quarterback. So what are your thoughts and predictions for this game?
Well, I saw something the other day that apparently when they've played the Colts in the past, they've happened to always play them like with 2 weeks of prep time. So, you know, that obviously helps you there. They won't have that this time. This would be pretty surprising to me if the Colts would win this game. Now, the Colts can do things against that New England defense for sure. They can go deep on them. They're not going to – but the problem is with the Colts is if you're the Patriots, you don't really have to honor their running game. So you can kind of really key on Luck, and Luck's offensive line is poor. You can hit him. You will hit him. And look, as good as Andrew Luck is, and I really like his upside and what I think he's going to become, he still throws a lot of interceptions. So I think they're going to be able to turn him over. I would expect New England to win by double figures in this game, and it could get ugly. I just don't think the Colts are all that good. I do agree that the Colts can put points on the board and that they could do some things. I mean, I felt that they had a chance to beat Denver because of the Manning situation, but, you know, ultimately I just don't see them being really that close in this game.
Yeah, and the Colts had a bye before that matchup against the Patriots this year, too, for what that's worth. Yeah, Andrew Luck could have an amazing game, and the Colts could win this game. And I think you have to respect the running game a little bit more now that Trent Richardson has actually been inactive. You know, the worst, one of the worst trades in modern NFL history. So, you have to respect that a little bit more. even though Heron has had a fumbling issue. But I'm going to go with the Patriots as well. I think the defense will probably bait Luck into an interception or two. So we agree. Everyone, thanks for listening. I don't think we'll be back necessarily next week, but sometime in the future. So everyone, have a great night, and we'll catch you later.